Hey everybody, this is Sunny. If you are listening to this, you are listening on the iTunes or other feeds. We added a whole bunch of other feeds. So if there's somebody you know who wanted to listen to the show, didn't want to sign up for the Patreon right away because they weren't sure, but they don't use iTunes, you tell them we're on Google and other places now, I think. I don't know. I checked a bunch of boxes on Audioboom. Anyway, this episode is about Ghostbusters Afterlife, and we've got a bonus episode that is up now about Hawkeye episodes 1 and 2. That's gonna be a Patreon exclusive forever. On Friday we're gonna have a episode about King Richard, a lot of tennis talk on that, tennis nerds talking tennis stuff, but also the movie. And then on Monday we're gonna have as a Patreon exclusive forever the show that will get us finally canceled. Vic Mattis is going to be talking about Wild Things, so you're not going to want to miss that. I have no doubt that somebody else is going to show up. Well, maybe not. I don't know. I can't promise that. We haven't taped the episode yet, but Vic will be there, and that's really all you need. So go sign up at the Patreon, subbeacon.com. It's as little as $1 a month. You get bonus exclusive episodes. You get everything, you know, when it comes out instead of 2 weeks later, as this episode is 2 weeks later, and we will see you over there.
Somehow, a town that isn't anywhere near a tectonic plate, that has no fault lines, no fracking, no loud music even, is shaking on a daily basis.
Under the dining table, now! Hey, remember that one summer we died under a table?
I found this in my living room.
Whoa, killer replica.
A replica of what?
A ghost trap?
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan V. Last and Sonny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com, you'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. Christmas is less than 40 days away. Gentlemen, how are we on this Wednesday morning? As we all know, when people listen to the show, yes. We're just about to head out on our long Thanksgiving commute.
We'll try and keep this. We won't go blue on this episode, so you can listen to it in
the
van.
Family. You'll be family
with the family.
I can't make that kind of promise.
We'll try not to curse. Hey, I'm going to jump in here for a second because we've taped the whole thing now. I just want to let you know that we do curse a little bit. So maybe don't listen to it with the kids in the van. Okay, I would. Save it for later. All right, back to your regularly scheduled programming.
JVL, what is happening?
Busting makes me feel good.
You just.
Oh, sorry.
You took my line already. That was my big line for later in the show.
I meant Ghostbusting because this is a clean show.
Yeah, it's a clean show.
Clean episode.
Yeah.
Clean episode. I meant Ghostbusting.
Getting those ghosts.
Ray
That's
Parker
what he was talking
Jr.
about. Getting those ghosts and putting them in the box. That's what makes them feel good.
Putting it in the box.
Yeah.
Putting it in the box.
Look, when all this
putting
is that
Slimer
gooey,
in the box.
When there's that gooey stuff that's left over after
putting,
you've been busting.
When you put the ectoplasm in the box, that's how you know
and
that you're busting.
And the crazy ghosts, those nuts. Busting those nuts makes me feel good. Boy. Did we just push it? That I just went.
I feel like you went right over the cliff.
Okay, sorry. What's going on?
Anyway, I'm fine. I may have to coach a middle school baseball team.
Hey!
We'll talk about that at another time, should it actually
happen.
If and when. But, you know, the worst thing you can ever do is put your head up. Because you put your head up for something, and all of a sudden people are like, hey, you over there. And anyway, that's fine. Sonny, how are you?
I'm sorry. Who is making you coach this team? Is it Tony Soprano? Has Tony Soprano decided that
it's the athletic director who I think runs a garbage business on the side and runs vending machines.
Waste management.
Wasn't this literally a long form story that you sent us, JBL, or maybe you linked to in one of your newsletters about like the crazy New Jersey baseball team and the guy who was like maybe connected was I'll try and find it.
It sounds like a great story. I'd love to read it, but I don't think I pointed people.
Sounds anyway. Like something you would have sent.
It's fine. Santino, how are you, buddy?
I'm fine.
All right.
Nothing, that's it.
Why are you? I don't. Why are we skipping off of you? I thought we were going to talk about Little Caesars.
Oh, you would. I mean, do you want to talk about that?
I want to talk about that.
Hip hoppy voice of you, Sonny. I don't know what's happening to your microphone just then.
What?
Hip hoppy, your voice.
Hip hoppy.
Was that just my? Yeah, it did.
I don't. Okay, did I fuzz out now a little bit? I don't know.
It was hard to tell.
Drake-like. Wasn't mesh.
Let's talk about
it. My auto tune turned on.
Yes, that was the auto tune. Let's talk about the Little Caesars thing you were saying.
I'm just excited because I want to hear about JBL's planned pies and pies with Little Caesars and Kroger pies, and that's just nothing but trash pies.
Yeah,
Kroger makes a pizza. There's not a Kroger near us here.
Kroger pizza. I have tried to ask the children. You can each order anything you want for Thanksgiving dinner. The world is you can have four different things. What would you like?
Everybody's
response has been, I don't know.
Oh, like you were like Mel Gibson at the end of that that M. Night Shyamalan movie, the aliens one. What's
Signs.
It called? Signs. You remember he says whatever you want to eat, and it's like a million different things.
Yeah. Well, I said that, and all four of them are like, I don't know. Oh,
you got shrugs.
And I keep pushing it. I'm like, we got to make some decisions. And they're like, I don't know. And you throw out, how about pizza? Well, maybe. I don't know.
It's
how about macaroni and cheese? So, I just feel like maybe we should just do ice cream. Maybe just ice cream for Thanksgiving. Because everybody will always eat ice. If I just slop a big, and not like a cone size, but like a soup bowl of ice cream in front of them.
A cone isn't a meal. You would have to have like a big bowl of ice cream for that kind of meal.
I hardly recall anyone in the history of mankind ever saying, wait, stop, I've had too much ice cream. No one ever really says that. Unless you're lactose intolerant, then you got a problem.
So, by the time you guys are listening to this, we will be probably midway through the ice cream trough Thanksgiving dinner at the last house.
I do like the idea of an ice cream trough, like a urinal trough, just filled with ice cream.
Ruined it for me.
You just shove your face.
But you have to get down on all fours. It's not like a trough on a table. It's like on the ground.
Now, I was thinking more like Jurassic Park.
In an oval.
I was thinking Jurassic Park where Laura Dern is there with...
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about there.
Remember they're waiting for the kids?
Laura
Dern
trough.
And Richard Attenborough, and they're sitting there, and the kids are not there. She just
says, the kids are, well, there's their kids are eating ice cream because it's going to melt.
Yeah, and before that, though, she lectures him, and she says, well, she
people are dying, Richard.
That's right. Yeah. People are dying.
Yeah. Anyway, listen, before this, we were talking about pizza before we went on the air, and Sonny said, why don't you just go get Little Caesars? And I said, you know what? We got a Little Caesars 1 mile from us, and it's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bad.
As long as you set your expectations properly,
right?
And
it's fine.
It is so cheap.
It's very, very cheap.
It is so cheap, and I would say as a value proposition, one of the highest ROIs of any chain pizza.
The number one value ROI chain pizza is the like medium two topping pizza or whatever from Domino's. It's like $5.99 if you go pick it up. That is a top tier pizza.
Is Domino's pizza good now?
Domino's pizza. So we were discussing this.
It looks so good on the commercial.
I recently ordered Papa John's in Texas, and the Papa John's in Texas. I don't know if it's a Texas thing, if it's Dallas or what.
I think it's both.
But Papa John's has gotten much, much worse over the last 3 or 4 years. I used to live near a Papa John's in Columbia Heights, and it was perfectly fine. It was good. It was a perfectly acceptable pizza substitute.
Yeah,
I liked Papa John's early on. But it was legitimately the worst delivery pizza I think I've ever had. In my entire life.
This is where they deliver it themselves.
They delivered it themselves. It was not good. It was terrible.
That's really unfortunate.
But I do like, I mean, I think Domino's is fine. Domino's, again, it's, again, for like a $6 medium two-topping pizza or whatever, like, you can't do much better than that.
Every now and then we would get that.
For $8, Little Caesars gives you two larges.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding.
I mean,
That's a lot of pizza.
I prefer Domino's to Little Caesars, I think.
Occasionally we would get the Domino's at the Weekly Standard. Do you remember this on a Friday night?
Yeah.
And then someone would order the chicken, what are they called, chicken kickers? I think the chicken kickers. Like you get kickers. Yes, the chicken kickers. And like Goldfarb would take the whole thing and he'd throw it at me the entire thing. He goes, get to work. Because he always wanted me to be enter a competitive eating contest. And I said, I can do volume, but I can't do speed.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're a slow, steady gorger.
Yes.
Not like a trash compactor.
No,
you don't want to
do that thing.
You gotta like, it's like you gotta just at a pace, not you know,
yeah,
shoveling
I can,
it all
I can
in.
Keep on going, you know, if I had unlimited time, so I can't do that. Do you know what I remember trying a long time ago? And we only did it once because we were like traveling somewhere. It was in New Jersey, JVL. It was probably closer to your side in the western part of the state. Godfather's Pizza.
There was a Godfather's there?
Yes, I remember it was somewhere heading out west as we're heading. So I don't know if it was Cherry Hill, but we were on our way down. So you cut across and you go down. And,
was that
and,
the real Godfather's or yeah. was that an independent, you know, like just some guy named
Joe?
No.
It was the Godfather's Pizza. And
it's
I
original
was really
Ray's
excited.
Versus Ray's original.
So this is my question.
It was very salty. It was very salty.
So yeah. I have never seen a Godfather's Pizza that was not attached to a gas station.
Oh, really?
The only Godfather, and this is one of the things that I found amazing about the Herman Cain presidential bid, is that everybody talked about Godfather Pizza like it was Domino's or Pizza Hut,
a thing that everybody
knew about. I thought, first of all, I have never heard of this thing. Second of all, I've never seen one. And it wasn't until years after the Herman Cain thing that I think I was in North Carolina, and I passed a gas, you know, like one of these Deliverance-style towns where there's a gas station, and attached to it is a pizza joint.
Yeah.
Which, man, let me tell you,
the
sticks of North Carolina, pizza from a chain created by a gentleman in Herman Cain, that's going to be some good pizza. It's so authentic.
Top tier.
So authentic. But anyway, I started looking then, and whenever I happen to see one, I'm almost always in the South, and it's always, you know, like the way sometimes in the North you'll have like a Dunkin' Donuts attached to a gas station quickie mart. That's what the Godfathers are.
No,
I've never
standalone.
I've never seen an actual Godfather.
This was a standalone,
before.
And again,
never.
This is more than 20 years ago, but it was a standalone in the town, and it's unfortunate. You know what it is, JVL? It's sort of like when you go up the turnpike now or the parkway, and there's a Roy Rogers, and they're almost always now just on rest stops.
Yep.
And it used to be a thing, you know? And the other thing we were just talking, right before we went on the air, I mentioned Pizza Hut. I love Pizza Hut so much. And I looked forward to it, and I thought it was
used to go to the hut, right?
Yes,
you wouldn't deliver pizza.
No, definitely not deliver. You could
it was
pick
a restaurant.
Up, you would pick it up, or you ate there.
You eat there, man, out of the red cups. You go there with your book it coupon, and you're like, "Give me my free personal pan pizza."
JVL, you had unlimited free Pizza Hut pizza back in the day, didn't you?
I did. When I did my cross-country basketball,
oh, man.
I didn't get into medical school room springing. I had basically a card from Pizza Hut that just said, let this guy eat anything he wants.
That is
and I would
so
just walk into a
amazing.
Pizza Hut and, you know, and flash that to the manager and they'd be like, okay. And they would just bring in, and you know, like I was playing basketball for six, sometimes 8 hours a day.
You're famished.
And I was famished. And so I was eating like 4,000 or 5,000 calories a day. Just like, rom, rom, rom,
well, to be fair, that's like four pieces of pizza. That's like four slices of pizza.
Oh, no.
I had like one half of a pepperoni pizza.
That explains what happened to me. But
yeah, but it's so I don't know. Did Domino's kill Pizza Hut by shifting people's pizza consumption habits from restaurant dine-in to delivery? And Pizza Hut was resistant to that.
Yes.
I believe Pizza Hut resisted delivery. And so in a way, Pizza Hut is Blockbuster to Domino's' Netflix.
That's very deep. And I think that maybe that, I don't know. But that makes sense to me.
Yeah,
I just remember I used to get all sorts of things at Pizza Hut, including they had a promo for this thing called the Piazza. Which isn't actually real. It's not a real Italian thing. They created it, which is like a giant pizza. It was their version of like Chicago deep dish, but it wasn't that deep. And they just covered it with a whole other like layer of pizza on top. So listeners, if you can go to YouTube, because I did this recently, and just type in like Pizza Hut Piazza, you can find the old commercials. It's ridiculous because they said, we introduced it to the Italians. We went to Italy. And we went to like an Italian, a small Italian town, and they try, and then of course the Italians.
I remember this commercial. I remember that commercial.
It's like amazing.
You know, I want to say this about Pizza Hut though. Back in the day, and again, I have not had Pizza Hut in 20 years.
Sadly, right? Same.
But back in the day, you would get Pizza Hut in the way they cook the. And I'm not a deep dish guy by nature. By nature, I'm a thin crust guy. But the Pizza Hut deep dish, man, they used a lot of butter where the dough hit the pan.
You saw that, yes.
And the result was it really got golden and crispy.
Golden.
And they used, you know what they didn't do? They didn't skimp on the mozzarella.
No, they didn't. No, they didn't.
And that's one of the things that drives me crazy. When you get, I feel like today you have to order extra cheese just to get to what used to be normal cheese. Because everybody's cutting back. It's
inflation.
It is inflation.
It's two things. It's two things. One is the inflation. That's true. And the second thing is because they want to be these DOC pizzas, right? So they're authentic, right? Authentic Neapolitan pizzas. And oh, by the way, in Naples, they only put a little bit of cheese on there.
Yeah. I don't like that.
I want American pizza.
I want real cheese on it. I want a lot of it.
I want 6 cups of mozzarella yes. on every slice.
Yes.
That is what I'm looking
when
for.
You would How eat, many when calories is a large Hut, pie? When you would eat pizza, that mozzarella, it would be, I don't know, a quarter inch thick, and it would string out. And you know what? I liked it.
And we're making our readers real. Our listeners are getting so hungry, they're like, oh, forget about the turkey. We're going to go to Pizza Hut.
But it wasn't, for the record, it wasn't deep dish. It was like the personal, it was the pan
pizza.
The personal
pan, it was like
the pan. It was, that's not really a deep dish. It's like a, it's just like a thicker crust. It's like.
Thick and chewy.
So good, though.
Thick and chewy. You had a choice. Thick and chewy or thin and crispy.
Mm-hmm. Uno's was the chain.
That's right. And that was a deep dish. And like Uno's and Dewey's in Chicago. And then I got sick from deathly ill from an Uno's in Cleveland Park.
Remember that Uno's.
Yeah, it was a sauce.
I remember the Georgetown Uno's.
So do I.
I've been to the Georgetown one. Is the one in Union Station still there?
I can't believe that would be still be there. No.
I don't think so. I think it was gone the last time I was in Union Station, but I could be wrong.
No, that's right.
I could be wrong. Okay. Yeah. All right. Victor, what's up, buddy?
Me? Okay. Sonny, you're fine?
Sonny ceded his time to Pizza Talk.
Okay. I'm fine. So went to see the movie today, and I felt like such a sloth that when it came back, it was still in the afternoon, around 3, a little bit after 3 o'clock, and I thought, you know, maybe I want to go for a run. But it was cold and it was kind of a little bit rainy out and whatever. But the kids were like, "Dad, just go." So I said, I went out and it was like dank. You know how it's dank and cold and damp. And it was like, it started to rain a little bit. But I went out anyway and I started running. But what I didn't realize is, of course, you know, it got dark quick. So all of a sudden I'm out there. And I'm not, you know, I just have my gray hoodie, a hooded sweatshirt and black sweatpants. And I realize I need to get back onto sort of the smaller, quieter roads, not be crossing like Lee Highway or Washington Boulevard because, you know, it's getting dark. And then I thought to myself, have I reached that point that I might have to get one of those reflector vests for
That's
crazy
no joke.
Runners?
That's no joke.
JVL, do you own one?
No, Shannon does because she used to do a little bit of that. I think you should have one.
That's why I wanted to throw that because I knew you'd have thoughts on this.
The scariest that I've ever had of this, where you head out not realizing what time it is, was
I got fast. It was 4:30.
As an undergraduate in Baltimore,
yes.
And we had the time change in the fall, and I wasn't quite thinking about things. And so I went out for a run. Just went to do, I think it was like an easy 10 miles. This was back when I ran a lot. But what I did was I just ran east from my apartment.
Oh.
And I wasn't quite paying attention to the sun going down. And all of a sudden, I get to my out and back mark past like Memorial Stadium.
Ooh.
And it is dark, and I am in a bad part of Baltimore.
Suddenly, you're making really great negative splits.
And I think I did, because I always laughed about this, I think I did that second 5 in like 30 minutes flat. I just turned around and I was just like, I got to get out of here before I get shot.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a good motivator for that. I did.
It was great.
I'm not going to go as far as to say I want to be one of these people who has... My sister might have one of these lights. Will you put it on your head?
Yeah, are you gonna get the lights that like blink on your shoes?
You don't need that because your eyes adjust to it.
Okay. Also, yeah, you don't need. But you do want to make sure that people can see you.
Yeah. Well, you could jerry rig one.
Yes.
But I do. All seriousness. Okay. Yeah. If you have to cross streets and you're gonna be out when it's dark, just get one of the vests.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I don't know, man. Oh, thank you. I got back. And it's funny because even when it's cold, I still worked up a sweat and was very thirsty. And you know what I suddenly had a hankering for? I wanted to get I felt like drinking high C. But
an Ecto Cooler?
Oh, speaking of which, wow, you jumped right to it. Such an easy feed.
Sorry, I didn't mean to step on your transition.
That was the whole plan. I was going to say, what was it called? Speaking of which, over the weekend, Ghostbusters Afterlife was at the top of the box office with at least... 44 million, followed by Eternals with 10.8 million and Clifford the Big Red Dog in third place with 8.1 million. What I want to know is next week, will Clifford overtake Eternals? Box office thoughts.
So we're pull back the curtain a little bit. We're discussing this Sunday night. We're taping this Sunday night because we travel schedules. We want to make sure we get it out there. So we don't have the actual official final numbers yet. What was interesting about Ghostbusters was that it ticked up all weekend, that the initial lowball estimate that Sony was putting out there was, oh, we expect 28 million.
Wow.
And the rest of the industry, according to Deadline, was saying it's probably going to be closer to 35 million. It's going to be 30 to 35 million. That was before any numbers came in. After the Thursday night previews, which was, I think, 4.5 million, the projected numbers or the prediction numbers kind of ticked up a bit to about 40 million. And sure enough, after like the first round of numbers on Friday came in, Deadline's story was like, all right, we're looking at a $40.5 million weekend. And then after Saturday's numbers came in and after we got a look at the matinees and all that, the number ticked up again on Sunday to 44 million. So you could say it ticked up from 28 to 44. More realistically, it ticked up from like 35 to 44. But what that suggests to me is that the word of mouth on this movie is pretty good, that it is a matinee movie, that it is going to play well with kids and adults. It's a four quadrant picture, as they say.
It's because it's so good.
We can talk about that in a second. We can talk about that in a second. But it does have an A- from CinemaScore, which is better than the 2016 Ghostbusters B+, is in line with the Ghostbusters 2, I think, got an A-. So, people seem to be into it. I will say that I have yet to hear from a normal audience member that this movie was not to their satisfaction
until now.
We could talk about that in a second. The other interesting number here is that Eternals only did $10 million in its third weekend. It suffered another 60% drop. Again, maybe that number ticks up a little bit by the time we get finals on Monday, but it had a 62% drop second weekend and a 60% drop this weekend. And I think that the 60% drop in the third weekend is much, much more worrisome for Marvel and Disney, because if you look at comparable, you know, the first to second weekend drop can be tricky because, you know, what if those are always big numbers in the first weekend and the second weekend is always going to be smaller. So like a 62% drop, not the end of the world, but a 60% drop third to second weekend does not happen with these movies very often. So Venom, which is not an MCU movie, it's just a Marvel movie, dropped, I think, 48% in its second to third weekend. Black Widow, which was again competing against Premier Access, dropped 55%, which was like a big drop, but it's still less than Eternals. And I think Shang-Chi dropped something like 32% from second to third weekend. So like, or 38%, something like that. So I just kind of assumed that Eternals would get to the you know, to the 180 range, which is about where it would need to be in the top five for the end of the year. And I do not think it is going to get there. Mm-mm. Not at this rate. It is, you know, it's stalling out. So I don't know, man. A Marvel movie doing under $160 million is not very, it doesn't happen a lot. Mm-hmm. Doesn't happen a lot. Mm-hmm. So those are the two things I was looking at this
week. How will we ever find out what happens to the Eternals?
I assume we're going to get more Eternals movies.
They're being held hostage in orbit.
They're being held hostage in Shanghai is where they're being held hostage.
What will Ashram's verdict be?
Thank you. Thank you, man.
I wish you guys could see JVL rolling his
eyes
right
now. Yes, I feel the same way. Horrendous. It was a terrible movie. There was a couple of interesting trailers. If I can just throw this in before we get into the meat of it. One was, I got Morbius.
Morbius.
Which is, I guess, more of the related to Venom world. They're not going to have, I don't
Spider-Man.
Know.
Spider-Man.
Yes.
Morbius is historically a Spider-Man villain, was introduced in the 1970s. He's a doctor who essentially turns himself into a vampire.
Okay. So it's going to be part of that world. But the Spider-Man trailer, I thought, was great.
Yeah? You were excited for No Way Home?
One of my favorite episodes of an old Spider-Man cartoon, and I had a little comic book about it. It was one of these little, you know, those little like novellas, but they were like bantam books, you know, and it was a Spider-Man one that I had as a kid. And it was Spider-Man versus, I think it was like Green Goblin, Mysterio, and maybe the Vulture or something, like the triple villain take, you know, like the triple villain.
Was it the Sinister Six?
It might have been. Electro might have been there. It was all my favorites, and this one looks like you've got three. And I'm getting the sense they're. I mean, obviously they brought back Alfred Molina, so this is going to be really exciting.
But they're from all
yes.
of the Spider-Man
so this
movies,
ties
not
it up.
Just the MCU
oh my
movies.
Gosh.
We're talking multiverse
like,
here, my
like
friend.
Andrew Garfield villains.
The Electro, who was played by Jamie Foxx,
yes.
and the Andrew Garfield is in this trailer. And then you have Doc
very
Ock.
Briefly.
You have Doc Ock.
And I saw
from
Sandman,
the,
maybe?
Sandman.
Is that going to be Thomas
there?
Hayden Church? Remember that?
I would assume so. I don't know.
Crazy.
It's going to be huge.
Yeah.
All the villains.
Yeah. I love them. Okay.
No word yet officially if the other Spider-Man are going to be in it, but we'll see.
Oh, that would be it. That would be, of course, they're older now. JVL's shaking his head. It's not for him.
You're muted. You're muted. JVL, you're muted.
So this looks to be taking one of the most polarizing storylines in the history of Spider-Man, which is the Brand New Day, which was Marvel's attempt to just shake up the Etch-a-Sketch on the character because there's just too much stuff had glommed on. He was married to Mary Jane, and Aunt May had died, and Harry Osborn was died. And there was just too much continuity. And so they did Brand New Day, which just...
Clean slate it.
Clean slate, just go back to normal. Go back to the characters that we all know and love and the relationships that we know and love. How? Magic. And okay. Whatever. I hope it's good. I would like to go see a good Spider-Man movie. Mm-hmm. I am not optimistic.
Okay. Sonny, how about a big boy review of Ghostbusters Afterlife?
Ghostbusters Afterlife? Did you like Ghostbusters in 1984? Because I got good news for you. This is like Ghostbusters, but with kids. So Ghostbusters Afterlife starts with a shadowy figure in a field somewhere running from a mysterious... ghostly force that he loses to. He loses to this ghostly force and he dies. And his family comes to take over his dirt farm. Turns out that mysterious person in the dirt farm was Egon Spengler. And his family is out in the middle of Oklahoma now. Shot in Canada, by the way. This movie was shot in Canada. It was not shot in Oklahoma. So if those windswept plains looked familiar to you. They only should if you are from Canada. If you're a priest from Canada listening to this show, that's about the only person who's going to recognize those. But family moves to Oklahoma. The family is a single mother, Carrie Coon, the great Carrie Coon, who has a young, I don't know, like a 15-year-old boy named Trevor.
Would you say the great?
Yeah. Elaborate.
Great Carrie Coon.
You're really tossing that around pretty liberally there, aren't you?
I love Carrie. Did you guys ever watch The Leftovers?
No, sorry.
She's fantastic in The Leftovers, and also she's the sister in Gone Girl.
Oh, okay.
Anyway,
yeah,
Carrie Coon, pretty great. Great in this movie too. Anyway, family moves out to Oklahoma. The great Carrie Coon plays the mother. There's a like 12-year-old girl who is maybe on the spectrum, hard to say, but she's very into science. She's very smart into science. And then there's a 15-year-old boy who like wants to, you know, get in with the local youths. Turns out that this town was created by Ivo Shandor. Do you remember Ivo Shandor?
Wait, they mentioned him in the first movie.
Ivo Shandor was the guy who built the skyscraper on which most of Ghostbusters took place.
Oh, that was discussed in the jail cell in the first
movie. Yes, exactly. Nobody ever made him like this, as the line goes. He built the building out of the selenium girders. Do you know where the selenium came from?
Canada.
Came from this Oklahoma town. Came from this Oklahoma town.
Canada, good answer.
Before we get into full spoiler territory, the very, very basic, my like
how
one sentence review.
How could anything in this spoil anything? If well, you have so, but, seen the well, original Ghostbusters, you well, have seen this movie.
We'll get to that in a second. The thing about this movie is that the nostalgia here is not strictly speaking a nostalgia for the Ghostbusters movie. It is not shot in the style that Ivan Reitman shot Ghostbusters or Ghostbusters 1. The whole mode of humor is different. Ghostbusters 1 and Ghostbusters 2 were workplace comedies. This, however, is a kids movie. It's a kids movie. What we have here is a Spielbergian kid adventure movie. And if you watch it on that level, I think it's a totally acceptable film. It's a totally fine, entertaining, whatever. It is what it is. The weirdest thing about it is that it is an exact carbon copy of the first in terms of plot points, in terms of villains. I don't understand how you make a Ghostbusters movie. You have the entirety of your imagination to build up a whole new world of ghosts, and you decide, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna bring back Gozer. We're gonna bring back Gozer's dogs. We're gonna have keymasters, and we're gonna have gatekeepers, and we're gonna put a fucking We're gonna put a Sumerian temple in the middle of Oklahoma for some reason, buried thousands of feet beneath the ground, 2,000 years old, giant Sumerian statues. And none of this makes any sense. None of this makes any sense at all. So there's a part of me that wants to rip on this movie endlessly for being totally just a total copy, for being a like real symbol of how decadent Hollywood is and how like out of ideas they are. And yet I enjoyed it.
Oh,
I enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed it.
Wow.
I thought I had a good time in the theater. I left feeling happy. And that's about all I can ask from a movie like this. It's lazy, but it's lazy, but it's not lazy in the way that like Red Notice is lazy. Red Notice is lazy because it looks cheap and shoddy. This looks like a real actual movie.
Sure.
It's just totally ripped off from the first one. And I like,
and yet
I don't understand it. I don't understand
and it. And you don't understand the appeal that you, the
well, I don't understand why they would do that. I just don't, I don't understand why they would do that, except for the fact
nostalgia.
That they were like, except for the fact that they were like, the 2016 one flopped because it was too different from the original. We need to do the original and just do it. We need to just do the original again. We're just going to do the original again.
It's The Force Awakens.
It is very similar to The Force Awakens.
JVL.
Don't we need a word for that? We say soft reboot, but that doesn't. It should be like a requel or a seek-oot or something.
because like brunch.
This is whatever, Vic. If you tell me you love this,
you're going into pass mode. Okay, fine.
If you tell me you loved this mm-hmm. and that it killed it on the quadrants, mm-hmm. I might die.
Okay, ready for the grades?
Go ahead.
Here we go. Plot was a B. I mostly understood it. It's pretty straightforward. You know, it's like, oh, grandfather.
What was there not to understand?
Well, there's a lot of weird stuff going on. How come no one remembers that the ghosts were real? You know, it's like this huge thing happened. It was monumental. Now, partly.
The Manhattan cross rip?
Yeah. You know, and she's like, oh, I don't believe in ghosts. Well, you know, this thing happened. Okay.
You know, it happened before weird. YouTube. It's not like everyone was walking
around.
Are
the kids
with
the first ones to discover
cameras?
The ruins and the mine shaft? Nobody else discovered this. It was just the kids now.
Well, there were signs telling people not to go there.
Of course, Pod is yelling at me because I'm not giving him any credit. I just read, he filed a review of Ghostbusters. So I just read it. So that's in my mind about the plot. But no, I had those issues even before I read his review. That's the first thing. Duration, D. Man, this one is long. I would have dropped the first 30 minutes. Okay, action violence is B. It's just okay. I mean, they have the things. Apparently, it's very easy to use those laser weapons. Sex nudity is a D. It's PG-13. I found myself strangely attracted to the mom. And I say strangely because, you know, she's
why
a woman.
Why strangely?
Because she's an older woman.
Because she's age appropriate?
I say she's older woman, but of course, I don't want you to tell me how old
she is.
I'm
going to go look right
now.
Don't look.
She must be like in her 60s.
But the best thing about this, Carrie Coon and Paul Rudd are the best thing about this movie.
No.
She is born in 1981. What year were you born in, Victor?
Nixon was still president, but that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying more than that. Okay.
Yeah, no, she's pretty old.
Yeah,
pretty
she's
old.
Ancient. She's ancient. What were your expectations? I had lower expectations because I had heard rumblings. And prior to hearing the rumblings, I was excited. I said, oh my gosh, and Paul Rudd's in it. This is going to be great. Oh, and there's going to be cameos. This is going to be amazing. But because I already heard people not being happy with it, it was lower.
My expectations were exceptionally low. I went into this assuming it was going to be terrible.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay.
And because it wasn't terrible, and I laughed, and I enjoyed Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon doing like the hot mom and the hot teacher thing together. I mean, there's so much bad, cringy stuff in this, like Ghost Harold Ramis.
Okay, that's on my pro. You know, I have pros and cons. That's on my pro side. You know why? A better CGI Harold Ramis, greater sign than CGI Grand Moff Tarkin and Princess Leia.
Oh my god!
And I think I
knew you were going to say that.
Particularly in The Force Awakens, the CGI Carrie Fisher in The Force Awakens.
She wasn't CGI in The Force Awakens. You're thinking of Rogue.
That's my joke.
Rogue
that's
One.
A joke.
That's
Sonny.
The joke, Sonny. That's
the
joke. Okay.
I see
think what made it work, yes, it was cringy, but what made it work is that he didn't speak. I don't know. That was like, okay. But somehow they made it. But
this
is a kid's
cringy
movie, but if you want to see a kid's movie, see Super 8, you know?
But that's what this movie is, though. This movie is not a Ghostbusters movie. Mm-hmm. It's Super 8 mm-hmm. or it's Tomorrowland or it's one of these other like Spielberg nostalgia.
Before,
it's E.T.
Before I throw
it's
this.
It's E.T. It's Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It is not a Ghostbusters movie. That and like once you accept it on that level, I think it like works perfectly fine.
Even on that level, it dragged. I would have cut out at least 30 minutes. I'm going to throw this to JVL. I will say for me, the best part of the movie was beginning from when Paul Rudd walks into Walmart. Everything before that, I think I was fine not without. JVL, go.
So why does Ghostbusters work? The answer to this is that and when we say Ghostbusters work, I think what people who might be younger than us don't understand is that Ghostbusters had a budget of $30 million in 1984 dollars, and it grossed $300 million domestic alone. That is a 10x the budget.
And that was $300 million in 1984
dollars. In a world where there was no international market.
Yeah.
You cannot get 10x on a movie unless you are working in the realm of independent cinema. right? If you're doing the Blair Witch Project,
really small budget,
you can get 10x, maybe, if you catch lightning in a bottle. Ghostbusters, I saw this at the Alamo, and the pre-roll at the Alamo was just an endless series of commercials for Ghostbuster spinoffs.
Oh.
From the Saturday morning cartoon crossover with Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling, to the Ghostbusters cereal, to the Ghostbusters lunchboxes, the Ghostbusters action figures,
merch,
the Ghostbusters slime kit, the Ghostbusters costumes.
The real Ghostbusters.
The real Ghostbusters, Extreme Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters video games. I think people cannot fully appreciate what a gigantic hit Ghostbusters was. And that is because Ghostbusters looked like maybe a kind of Kitty Wheels scary movie in the realm of Gremlins, but it was actually Stripes.
Yes.
The engine on Ghostbusters is Stripes.
Another Ivan Reitman movie.
And
it's PG Stripes.
It is wildly original. It has three very solid characters who all we totally understand. We understand who they are and how they relate to each other.
Plus a great supporting cast.
None of those three characters are archetypes. They're all totally original. And then, as you say, we have all these secondary characters, Sigourney Weaver, Richard Atherton, Ernie Hudson, Annie Potts, Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis.
Who, in a lesser movie, would be throwaway parts. But here, they are written just enough meat on the bones to make us care about them and know who they are, and the actors are great in them. And it has such incredibly low stakes all throughout it until the very end when all of a sudden Gozer the Gozerian shows up and we are at an end of the world situation where we thought this whole thing was a romp. And then the movie switches gears on us again by undercutting all of those stakes by popping up a totally unexpected and instantly iconic villain with the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Mm-hmm.
The character design on which, by the way, is fucking amazing. The choice to keep the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man with his idiot smile the whole time while he's wrecking New York is unbelievably inspiring.
Also, the special effects at that time, by and large, I thought worked for
great.
Me. When I saw it in the theater, you know, you can be very skeptical about it. I was much younger then, but I remember seeing it in the theater.
If you squint hard enough, you can see your boobs.
Right.
You can see Gozer's boobs.
Gozer's boobs. Yes, it's true. And I think that the original Gozer hotter than the second Gozer.
The
I
second Gozer is Olivia Wilde.
Yeah, do you know who played? It's Olivia Wilde.
Yeah, it's Olivia Wilde.
It's
Gozer. Yeah, they don't give her much. Anyway, so I think Afterlife does not work as a movie. And here's why, right? So the movie pretends that there are four main characters, but there's only one main character. We have Paul Rudd and the mom and the creepy brother taking up space and taking narrative time in this when there's only one character, and that's Phoebe. Yeah. The whole story revolves around her. The other three don't need to be in it, except as sock puppets so that we can hit the beats of the first movie, right? Because we need a keymaster and we need the gatekeeper, and so that's why we have them. The brother,
I'm sorry, can I interrupt?
Yeah.
The funniest moment in this movie to me was when Carrie Coon is like walking towards the mountain, and then all of a sudden her dress becomes this like golden lame thing. And I remember I remember thinking in the theater, okay, that's like Sigourney Weaver's dress. I had always just assumed that was something that was in Sigourney Weaver's closet.
Yes,
me
I always
too.
I had always assumed that was just like, that's 100%. Her, I'm going to Studio 54 outfit.
Yeah, that's right.
And instead it's like a whole magical thing.
Yeah.
That's the moment to me where I was like, I hate what they're doing right now, but I still find it very compelling.
So you have... Again, you have all these characters who should be secondary characters who are given leading character time despite not really advancing the story in any way. And the movie, to make it even worse, splits most of them up. We spend most of the movie with these four characters in different places, which is weird and off-putting. But the deepest level is that this is, as you say, Sonny, a sort of scary kids movie with comic beats. Not a comedy with a couple spooks. It inverts that formula. And I just, I don't know. I hate everything. I hated everything about it, I think. In the theater, I didn't hate it. In the theater, I was just kind of like, eh. Although I would say in my showing, again, yes. This is a sample size of one, but it was a very crowded theater, and it seemed to fall pretty flat. I mean, nobody was jazzed.
Oh, man. See, I saw it Thursday night. I saw it the Thursday night it was released. And my theater, like a third of the theater clapped like three times
what?
In the movie.
Wow.
When Harold Ramis shows up the first time at the end, when all the Ghostbusters show up, like wow. And when Sigourney Weaver showed up in her post-credit scene.
That post-credit scene is terrible.
Yeah. Not great.
Did
you stay for the final?
I stayed all the way. What is
at the very end?
There's a scene with Ernie Hudson where he's talking about how he's like a crypto investor now, basically.
Was it funny?
No.
No.
Oh.
No.
No. It was not.
It is sequel setup material. But this is so I thought to myself as I'm watching this, who is this movie for? Now, obviously, it's for Sony, because Sony has no streaming channel, and so has to strip mine every single piece of IP they could even plausibly get their hands on. I think this looks like a labor of love for all of the people involved. I think this was deeply important and personal for Dan Aykroyd and the Reitman, son. And these, I think a lot of it was just coping with Harold Ramis's death. To a large degree.
Including them really, seeing his ghost.
Yeah. No, I think they really wanted that, and it felt like a family reunion kind of thing for them. But for the audiences? Is there... But A-minus, $44 million. I don't know. Maybe it plays... I just feel like two weeks from now, nobody is going to remember this movie.
My theater was mostly quiet. A couple chuckles here and there. Definitely no clapping. And it was a crowded theater. But... you know, I just felt like, you know, I knew they were going to make an appearance at some point in the movie, but waiting when it doesn't happen until the very end that you see the original Ghostbusters. And I thought, couldn't they have been there throughout? Maybe that would have helped. I like Paul Rudd a lot. I think Paul Rudd makes any movie better with him, just because he has just a weird, funny way of delivering any line. And so that helps the movie along. But
I mean, I really do think that like the Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon dynamic there is like the engine that moves the movie forward. Like as much as the movie is about Phoebe, right, and like her trying to find her place in the world, without the mom and teacher dynamic there kind of moving things along. But again, it's such a weird inversion of the original film, which is, as you say, it's basically a PG Stripes. It's like a PG Stripes with ghosts. And in that movie, you literally have a joke about a ghost giving Dan Aykroyd a blowjob.
Okay, again, the kids.
In the middle of the firehouse.
The ghost
right?
is just doing what mommy and daddy do on birthdays and anniversaries. That's all.
Yes, the ghost. I mean, it's not even implied. It's like very explicit in this, and in this movie. On the other hand, the Asian kid named Podcast.
I like that kid. That's the one
we haven't
thing
even
I liked
we
about
haven't
it.
Even
I'm
talked
sorry,
about Podcast.
I like
Podcast. JBL
best JBL. Asian no, kids in short no,
short round.
Thank
no,
you.
No, it's he's not. It's not. He's the kid. Isn't live stream. The kid isn't
he's podcast.
The kid isn't Twitch. He's Podcast, because this movie was written by 50-year-olds. Oh. So there's a scene in this movie where Podcast tells Phoebe that the teacher is trying to bone his mom, and she gets very awkward and weird about it, and that's the angle of this humor is like it's like kids being annoyed and grossed out by their parents, but also realizing that they love them and want to. It's a kid's movie. This is a kid's movie. And again, I think it's a perfectly acceptable kid's movie. I think this is actually like, as far as kids.
It felt like a kid's movie.
I've seen Clifford, and I've seen Paw Patrol. And like, as far as kids movies go, movies you can take your kids to, this is top tier stuff. This is like,
we can agree on this. Ghostbusters Afterlife is mostly superior to Paw Patrol the movie.
Oh, boo.
I like how Paul Rudd was showing the kids Cujo and
Child's Play.
That's funny. Yeah. That's something that I would do.
It's funny.
Why
it's
is it funny?
Bit.
It's funny. No, it's only funny.
It is funny. It's funny because it's absurd.
It's funny because it's
that's not even member berries. That's not even member berries. It's actually just funny because it is ridiculous because it's like it's absurd.
But there are a lot of member berries. I think JVL is right.
Oh, well, no, but oh God, I wish I had been keeping track. I mean, it's like when they walk into the farmhouse the first time and there's the stack of books.
Yeah.
Right? Or when Phoebe goes into the basement.
Twinkie.
When Phoebe goes and pulls out a Nestle Crunch wrapper as if Egon has just held on to that wrapper for 40 years in his pocket. Or the Twinkie I was just like, at a certain point, I was annoyed, and then I was kind of impressed by it, and then I was annoyed again. I was just like, they're really committed to this not letting anything go from the original.
I honestly thought to myself about how long is the movie? About halfway through.
Over two.
I thought to myself,
it's 2 hours. It's 122 minutes.
I thought to myself, I can't
like
believe
that.
They haven't done the "Are you a god" joke. Are they going to go this whole movie without recycling that line? And then, nope. They're going to strip mine it. They're going to, if there is anything that you remember from the first Ghostbusters, they're going to put it in there and they're going to beat you over the head with it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, you know, there's no sly illusions going on here. What is Olivia Wilde, whose look is kind of interesting for Gozer, is given nothing interesting to do. The woman
who Gozer's played, not an interesting character.
Well, same thing. You know who else doesn't have anything interesting to do? J.K. Simmons. A great actor. Man, I said, is that J.K. Simmons?
And then he's gone.
Oh.
So whatever you want to say about the character of Gozer, when Slavina Javon appears as Gozer with like bubbles and shit, it's just absolutely iconic, right? And it's kind of interesting, and she
it's
has
wild,
like that one weird,
scary and hot.
Yeah, scary and hot, but also like that weird, are you a god? And if you're a god, then die. Like everything is just off kilter.
Mm-hmm.
And then here, just like, yeah, I guess, is that Olivia Wilde in there? Yeah, I guess it's her.
Why doesn't
she have bubbles on her tits? Why does she have the little like doomsday spines?
I like how we start off saying it's going to be a child friendly.
What's happening? And then it's over. Like then she's gone. Yes. You know, she becomes CGI running through cornfields because she has no motivation. There's nothing. There's no reason for her to be doing anything.
Yeah.
Why is that the weird sallow emo kid? Who I guess is famous, Justin Wolfhard.
Finn Wolfhard.
Yes, from Stranger Things.
Finn Wolfhard.
Okay, so why is he in this movie?
Because he was in Stranger Things.
I'm sorry. Why is his character in this movie?
Because you need an older sibling to get them to the mountain.
No, you don't. You just need your actual main character, Phoebe, mm-hmm. to make a second friend at school.
But
that's
you're
all.
Trying to bring in teenagers, and there's a
you need
little
teenage
bit of,
horniness. Yes.
The only, you know, the yes. only reason he really exists is to bring the character of Lucky, who I believe whose name we never actually get. And like, there's, you know, why do we see them in the meat freezer at the Shake Shack? Who could say?
Right.
But
I would have cut again. I could have cut all that stuff out.
The most random. You guys mentioned Olivia Wilde and J.K. Simmons, but the most random actual actor in this movie to me is Bokeem Woodbine.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Her father is the shocker.
Who plays the father sheriff? And he's in this movie for literally 60 seconds.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a second. Bokeem Woodbine, good actor. Mm-hmm. In some good movies, why is he in this at all? Like, it's one thing to do, like, it's actually, like, more acceptable to have... Is that J.K. Simmons playing Evo Shandor?
Yep.
So it's more acceptable to have J.K. Simmons play Evo Shandor as, like, a bit, because that's kind of funny, at least. But to have, like, Bokeem Woodbine just being a random nothing character for... I was offended on his behalf, frankly.
I liked Celeste O'Connor. Actually, the actor who made the most of an impression on me was her.
Is she the girlfriend or the love interest?
She's the quasi-love interest.
Yeah.
I gotta say,
she's nice.
I hope this doesn't get me in trouble. Celeste O'Connor is an interesting name for a gal from Kenya.
Oh.
O'Connor. Yeah. Kind of like Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
Okay. You didn't like, what's her name? Grace McKenna or McKenna Grace?
McKenna Grace? I thought she was fine. She was, you know, she looked...
I thought she was very good. I thought she was very good. She carries the movie.
She again, does carry the movie, yeah. To the extent
this movie works, yeah. It's as a kid's movie, and she is the like primary kid in it.
Yeah, to the extent that, you know, she's fine. She reminds me a lot of the girl, the actress who got her start as the young Jodie Foster in Contact and then wound up having a nice career, whose name I'll effort this while mm-hmm. we talk.
You know, it was a great Ivan Reitman movie that crushed the quadrants with Stripes. I just want to throw that out there. Think about that
yes.
one. On every level. Action. There was action. The bus. There was the bus. And everything else.
No, you know, JBL mentioned...
Jenna Malone. She looks a lot like Jenna Malone.
She's great. You know, JBL mentioned the original Ghostbusters and why it works. And, like, a thing... I'm stealing this from somebody on Twitter. I forget who. But somebody on Twitter made the very good point that the only reason Ghostbusters works... There's no reason for Ghostbusters to work. This kind of, like, workplace ghost 1980s New York comedy. The reason it works is because you had... two genuine geniuses, Harold Ramis and Bill Murray, working like at the height of their powers, and you had two like legit A-list talents, mm-hmm. Dan Aykroyd mm-hmm. and Ivan mm-hmm. Reitman, also like
that's right.
working at the absolute yeah. height of their powers, and it all came together just perfectly. Right. Like the original version of the Ghostbusters script was like them fighting ghosts in space. Like there's
is that right?
Like there was the Ernie Hudson role had been written for what's his name?
Eddie Murphy. I bet you anything, like, Eddie Murphy.
and Eddie Murphy, I think, took a look at that and was like, nope, not doing this. It was a freak of nature that movie did the business it did, and they've been trying to recreate that, and they like. Say what you will about the 2016 Ghostbusters. It's not a good movie, but at the very least it is like working in a similar, it's working with a similar like level of absolute talent. Like people forget that Melissa McCarthy was arguably the biggest movie star in the world for that stretch of time. Like she made a bunch of movies that made a ton of money.
Yeah.
And you
even
know,
if you didn't see it,
and Kristen Wiig was very yeah. was, you know, Paul Feig had made mm-hmm. like two or three like shockingly well received and like high grossing movies, and like that movie flopped for a bunch of reasons. Like number one, it just wasn't that right. good, but also like it got wrapped up in a bunch of political stuff and whatever. But like
you were in the thick of it.
This is toxic fandom.
This movie is doing a different thing entirely. It is a soft reboot, sequel, whatever, but also B, again, it's a kid's movie. Mm-hmm. This is a kid's movie, and like as a kid's movie, I think it works. I think it basically works.
We'll see what happens. I'm
going to make a prediction here. I think this movie goes on to gross $180 million domestic. I'm going to throw that out there.
Okay.
Which would put it in the top 5 or 6 for the year.
I remember the original Ghostbusters in the theater. You know what? The ending, it had everybody feeling good. You know what I mean? You come out of that theater and you're like, yeah. You know, it's the same feeling at the end of Back to the Future. It just ends on a great high note. It was great. Also, I want to mention, by the way, one thing people should do if you've never seen it, there are people out there who have not seen. You can go see it on YouTube. The Ghostbusters video by Ray Parker Jr. is a fantastic, it's a time capsule because it's, first of all, can't do a video like it. The ghost Me Too's the girl, right? She's Me Too'd by a ghost, right? Because he's stalking her in bed. And then the other thing is what you see is it's interspersed with all of Ivan Reitman's friends. And so you see them at their prime in their heydays, Chevy Chase, John Candy, Danny DeVito, Terry Garr, they're all saying Ghostbusters, even Melissa Gilbert, and Al Franken, and then of course, my favorite line from the song, which we all know. We can all say it at the same time.
Bustin'
makes
me feel
good. Yes. Go ahead. We'll say it with the listeners. Bustin' makes me feel good. There you go. A great line to a great
Ghostbusting.
Ghostbusting. That's what we're referring to. Okay. Do you have any other Ghostbuster thoughts?
I'm just excited that we finally got a good Ghostbusters movie.
I find it interesting every episode that we've done for the last 4 years, how it's sort of unpredictable, but it's usually two like and one hate. Every now and then it's three of us liking something, but a lot of times you never know how it's going to work out each episode.
But this time we got two hates and one like.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. What did I say? Two likes and one hate? Yeah, no, two hates and one like. Yeah.
Usually it's two.
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, it's rare that we're all in agreement. And you never know who's going to be on whose side. Okay.
I was shocked I liked this movie. I went into it expecting
to
hate it.
Again, I liked the last 30, 40 minutes, but that was it. Okay. I have a spirit of the week. Oh, you do, Sonny. Actually, I see you drinking something. What are you drinking?
Yeah. I'm drinking the Bliss Family Vineyards 2017 Cabernet Sauvignon.
Did you cash all of Coors Light, rather?
I finished
you crushed
the Coors
them
Light.
Like Stephen King.
Thank God.
Can of cans.
This is like a $11 or $12 bottle.
Those are the best ones. If you could find a good bottle at that price, that's the key.
So yeah, it's like we had some salmon for dinner. I cracked it open. I was like, I might as well finish it.
Very here. Nice. I got something. I was sent something. This is Peg Leg Porker Bourbon by Kerry Bringle. I'm going to read a little bit here. The only award-winning pitmaster and bourbon ager in the world. In 2016, Bringle founded Peg Leg Bourbon and its rich smoky notes, unmatched hickory charcoal favorite, straight Tennessee bourbon. It's an award-winning bourbon, can also be enjoyed by visiting his restaurant in Nashville, Tennessee. And if you can't find it, go to peglegporker.com. It's actually quite surprising. I was not expecting it to be, you know, this sort of eye-opening, but it was very nice. So there you go. Thank you for those people for sending that over.
How do you hook that stuff up?
I just get emails from people.
Wow.
From nice folks. They send me stuff. Probably because, well, probably the book. Shout outs. I have a shout out too. So we're busy here on this thing. A shout out to listener Amanda Lehman, who was debating with her husband, Charles Lehman. The quadrant score.
Does Charles have a brother?
I don't get. Oh, Lehman.
Lehman Brothers.
Very good. So, very good. No. Yeah. As in Charles Fain Lehman.
Formerly.
Yes, of the Manhattan Institute. They had a discussion of how the quadrant score would have been for the 2001 movie Legally Blonde. I told him that the overall score would have been an A-. The plot is an A+. Kind of original. Don't question me on this. Don't question the quadrants. Duration.
Your quadrants are bullshit, and you know
how
it.
How dare you? Duration is A+. Hour 36. They don't make movies like that anymore. Action violence is a C. Sex nudity is a B+.
How is it a C? How is the action violence?
She
a
goes
C?
From Twilight and Full Frontal to Reese absolutely
Reese
nothing.
Witherspoon.
Yes.
Twilight. Wait a minute.
It's a Paul Newman movie. She's 18 years old, and she goes total full frontal on it.
Oh, because it's a PG-13 movie. That's
and
why.
Then you get into Legally Blonde, and she
gets a B+.
Covered in pink taffeta, and you're like, yeah
and
B+.
She's a hot tub in a bikini. That gets a B+. It's a PG-13.
Sonny, I'm with you. This is
what is you people?
The quadrants are a
never
scam.
Never question the quadrants.
I'm sorry.
What
I'm
rated?
Sorry. In this
what
movie,
rated
this movie
was,
we just watched, Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon have sex.
You don't see
on the ground.
They go down and you
they
don't
have
see
sex
anything.
On the ground,
they're,
and you're like,
fully clothed.
See,
they're fully
see.
Clothed. Give me the what's her name? Coon, Carrie Coon, the legendary Carrie Coon. Give
she's
me her.
Great. The great
put Carrie her
Coon.
In a bikini. She'll get a B+.
You guys got
although
watch
she's
the
ancient,
great
even
show.
Though she's very old.
You're that's offensive. This is offensive, what you're doing right now. How dare you?
That is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments. Tweet us at SunnyPunch, at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We're there. Tell your friends. Happy Thanksgiving. Until next time. I got one thing, but if you have something, you go instead.
I got a thing.
All right.
No. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
This is very... Okay, well, JVL, anything?
No. Go.
Okay. A friend of ours who will remain nameless recently told me he lives on a street, and the name of the street is Laro. And I said, well, where does that come from? And he says that a neighbor who has lived in that development all her life, she knew the people who planned it. And what happened was they got drunk and they made a joke. She says that it was oral backwards. And that's where they came up with the name Laro. And I told my friend, it's a good thing you don't live on Lana Street. You know, you can't see me. I'm raising my hands. There you go. That was good 3 or 4 seconds. Woo.
This is the best kid-friendly show we've ever done.
I'm sure it's fine.